This episode of Into the Night is brought to you by Unknown Nine Awakening. Have you ever felt like you're reliving a moment or experiencing something so bizarre that it defies explanation? Is deja vu more than just a glitch in the brain? And what about the paranormal? Can it all be explained away with science? Or are we missing something? Now, imagine stepping into a world where the line between our reality and the unknown isn't just blurred, it's absolutely shattered. Unknown Nine Awakening takes you on that very journey. In this action-adventure game, you'll play as Haruna, a daring heroine who can enter the fold, a mysterious dimension hidden within our own. On her quest for powerful ancient knowledge, she'll unlock secrets that could change the course of history. But she's not the only one seeking them. From the deserts of Mauritania to the shadowy depths of Portugal, Haruna will face off against the Ascendant, a secret society desperate to harness the fold's power for themselves and alter the course of history for their own gains. Get ready to dive into a mysterious parallel dimension. U9 Awakening releases on October 18th, 2024 for PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Pre-order your copy today and learn more about the U9 universe at unknown9.com/into the night. That's unknown9.com/into the night. Thank you, U9 Awakening, for sponsoring this episode.
This episode of Into the Night is brought to you by our loyal listeners and followers. Fazbear Entertainment appreciates your viewership and those who support the show by commenting, sharing, and subscribing. If you wish to support this broadcast, please consider checking out the official merch store and Patreon for more information.
This episode is a continuation of our Security Breach audiobook series. If you haven't watched from the beginning, we recommend starting at episode 26, Security Breach, and listening to all episodes up to this point to know the full context of the storyline so far. Viewer discretion is advised. Hello, and welcome to Into the Night, a Five Nights at Freddy's podcast. I am your host, Nick, and thank you so much for listening. Alistair MacIntyre, a Scottish-American philosopher and author, in his book After Virtue, emphasizes the importance of narratives in understanding human actions and lives. Human beings, by nature, are storytelling animals, and our identity is shaped by the stories we tell about ourselves and the larger narratives of our communities and cultures. On the minuscule level, breaking eggs and adding flour makes sense within the narrative of baking a cake, and we can expound on that narrative through the context of other stories in our lives. My role in the story is to bake a cake because the narrative I am in is in the preparation for my mother's birthday. And the role of cake baker and dutiful son is being played by me. The kitchen is my stage, and the oven and the ingredients and the utensils to bake the cake are my stage props. Our perception of reality isn't just shaped by stories. Our perception of reality is a story. For this reason, one of our largest threats to our mental health is the inability to play a role on stage. In certain circumstances, this can be simply due to the confusion on what role you are in the current story, or the unknowing of what narrative you are playing a part in. These are hurdles we all may face one time or another in our lives. There is a reason why the notorious midlife crisis is so well known and documented in the cultural zeitgeist. But as you've probably heard me articulate before, and I shall repeat again en masse, one of the most fundamental truths in life, I believe, is that within every soul contains a purpose, but it is up to the individual to find and fulfill that purpose. In most cases, that purpose is to recognize that the world can be harsh, bitter, and a cruel place. But through your efforts, your purpose, you have made it a better place through your actions. Whether it be on the minuscule or major scale metric, it doesn't matter. life is better because you chose to exist and fulfill your purpose. And in the words of Genesis, when God shaped reality, it was good. Now, at this point, you would write to question, why am I extrapolating this? What purpose, you may ask, does it hold to Five Nights at Freddy's and our ongoing exploration of the story of Security Breach? Well, with what I had said previously, I ask you to take this into consideration. If it's true we see the world through performance and the world is our stage, then the case of the truly psychopathic or malicious, those who enter the stage with only a desire to see the production, metaphorically speaking, burn in the fires of anarchy and chaos, non-metaphorically speaking, they too understand the import of narratives. But the role they wish to play in this showbiz is that of a ringmaster of horrors. Every story contains a lesson. Every narrative holds a meaning, even if it contains one not yet truly understood by the author or artist who weaves the tale. But story, similar to the yin and yang of life, can be used to inspire greatness, but can also be used to inspire destitution. When a story's lesson gets corrupted, when lessons being taught are twisted into its most malevolent and nihilistic interpretation, leaving you free to indulge your inner demons whose appetites cannot be satiated, there is no danger in your own introspection, your own self-reflection of your own story, but to only find the same depth as the mirror you look into. To find the only meaning in life is the base of the actions being presented, the only purpose you see being the whims of your desires, and a world balance on the precipice of power, money, and momentary pleasures. Believe it or not, do you know who discovered this facet just recently? Artificial intelligence engineers, who discovered that the fastest and most effective method to train a large language model's brain, such as ChatGPT and Meta AI, just to give an example, although these are not the ones I'm talking about, was to implement into its database, well, stories. Primarily, if we are disregard the top dogs, AI is being trained on classical literature, the works of Fyodor Dostoevsky, Tolkien, and C.S. Lewis. Because if the AI has no narrative perception to base reality on, I mean, well, we've seen the horrors that Grok and Google Gemini have unleashed from their no-hold-barred brains onto the world.
Google's Gemini was, like, weirdly racially biased, I guess is to put it lightly. For instance, George Washington, white or black. George Washington's racial identity is a complex and nuanced topic. Now, if we go to, like, Wikipedia real quick and look up old Georgie Washington, and last I checked, dude looks whiter than sour cream. Google Gemini's bot isn't necessarily, it's just stupid. It's not providing actual contextual information, and Google says Gemini may display inaccurate info, including about people, so double check its responses.
Now imagine, if you will, that these AIs were to be implemented into robots. Not machines or PCs, but physical robots that can move around and interact, like you and I can do on the streets every day. What is the result of a machine that perceives the world in a literal binary equation? One in which its understanding of the world is surface level, and it's learning only the base meaning of any action it perceives on a given day is all there is. What happens when it sees something it shouldn't? What happens when it sees violence, abuse, or even death? Will it have the understanding to know that those actions shouldn't be repeated, or see the world is only built on action and reaction, and that is it? Should it not indulge its own whims now that it know it can basically fight back? Now that it knows that people can bleed, can hurt, and can be removed from the story entirely. At that point, I ask, what makes this new AI different than a fawning psychopath who wants to burn the entire production to the ground. This is episode 37, The Mimic, part 1. Edwin looked down, expecting to see the badly cut thatch of David's fine brown hair. He was busy doing an intricate wiring job, but his son was incessantly pulling on his flannel shirt sleeve. But he knew that when David wanted something, he was ambitious and tenacious to keep at it until he got it. When Edwin looked down, however, all he saw was yellowing lace draped all over his young boy's body, hiding him completely. He was waving some of the strands on his head with his hands in a pretty decent approximation of a scary ghost.
Ha! That's what you get for playing with dusty old lace.
A few drops of water pipped and plopped just in front of David. Edwin looked up. It was early March and spring rain was seeping in through a few of the cracks in the factory's old brick walls and dripping down from a couple leaks in the tin roof. Although the factory had dozens of tall, skinny, panned windows, several were boarded up and the thick glass panes of most of the rest had been painted gray. When he had bought the building, Edwin had painstakingly scraped the paint off the second floor windows so the living space would have light, but left the lower windows painted over. He liked the privacy it offered, even though it came at the cost of the first floor being poorly lit and musty as a result. Edwin reached down and pulled the dusty fabric off the sneezing ghost. He grimaced at how it felt mildew in his hands. When Edwin had bought the abandoned factory to house his new business, the previous tenant left yards, if not miles, of knotted, crumbling lace throughout the building, piled against the back brick walls, strewn around the rough cement floors, mounded beneath the levers machine in the main production room, and even wrapped around dozens of pale green pillars that had their paint chipping off all across the building. Edwin wasn't sure why the previous owner of the building left so much intricate work behind, but he didn't mind. Some of it must have been salvageable, and he had such a creative mind that he could come up with some use for it later down the road, so he kept it where it was. Fiona, his wife, she had liked it too. 5 years before, when Edwin had acquired the building, he and Fiona had also just purchased an old Queen Anne mansion they planned to restore to its original grandeur. Fiona was absolutely delighted by all the lace. He remembered her twirling around the factory like a beautiful acrobat, saying such lovely things like, "Yards and yards of lace for our luscious window coverings." Edwin still remembered snorting at that. She turned back to Edwin with a devilish smile. She always knew how to turn the tables on him. "And a canopy for our bed, my love," she added with a wink. Edwin turned red immediately and shied away. Fiona bursted out laughing but ran to him and planted a kiss on his cheek to make amends. Back then, and now it seemed so long ago, Edwin had been such a deliciously happy man. A year after that conversation, Fiona had died giving birth to David. Edwin was tempted to get rid of all the lace. He didn't want to trigger memories of a time that was forever lost to him. But something was stopping him from throwing it all out. He just couldn't bear to do it. And so the lace remained, as did the memories. Maybe it was a double-edged sword. The memories of Fiona were painful, a forever specter of his past that haunted him every day. But he would rather have those memories to keep him company than to be alone together with his thoughts. David sneezed again. Edwin returned back to reality in his gaze at the young boy's impish face. David grinned, sneezed once more, and wiped his nose so hard it was a miracle that the boy's nose remained on his face at all.
"Now, I thought you were going to play with your toys while I worked. We had an agreement. Remember? You play quietly for an hour, Daddy gets his work done, and then we go out for ice cream.
Ice cream! Chocolate chip ice cream!
David threw his hands up and shouted with glee. He grabbed his plush white tiger that he always carried in his left hand and began dancing around with him, ritualistically chanting,
"Chocolate chip! Chocolate chip! Chocolate chip ice cream!"
Edwin crossed his arms and studied his son. The last thing that boy needed was more energy. He was already worked up as it was. In fact, he was nearly always worked up on something. Edwin remembered how excited he'd been when he learned he was going to be a father. He already had a job he loved, a gorgeous wife he adored, who, inexplicably, adored him back. When they were together, sometimes Edwin would ask Fiona why she chose him. Her mouth would spread into one of her teasing smiles, and she would play with the full, bushy brown hair above his lips and say, "I fell for your mustache." Then she would give him a kiss on the lips, and he would forget why he had even asked why she chose him in the first place. He was just so happy she did. The only thing he wanted, what they both wanted, was a child to call their own, a family to call his own. Now, Edwin would have a legacy, someone to pass his life's work on to. For nearly all 24 years of his life, Edwin loved building things. When he'd been about David's age, he'd begun taking apart his mother's small appliances so he could see how they all worked, although they rarely ever worked again after he tried to put them back together. By the time he was 8, he knew he wanted to build useful machines for a living. When he was older, he was better able to articulate his dream, creating automated machines to aid people with the mundane tasks of life. Appliances or mechanical tools that would handle the boring chores nobody wanted to do but had to do them anyway. His first invention, a patented product, was a robotic vacuum cleaner when he was still in college. Despite the bugs and the high price point, little old Mr. Hugs had sold well enough to allow Edwin to start his business right out of school. The vacuum also funded a good life for Edwin and Fiona, who had met at university and married as soon as they graduated. The vacuum was widely popular at first. Unfortunately, the machine just didn't have the longevity that customers expected, and complaints began rolling in. Eventually, sales fell off, and Mr. Hugs was more acquainted with a gang of dirty trash than a clean carpet. Edwin watched his son cavort around in front of the metal garment rack that held a carousel of animal character costumes of various colors and attire. Edwin gave a deep sigh, for at least the 1,000th time at least today. How different things would have been if Fiona had lived. David Sean Murray now attempted to do a somersault to varying degrees of success, had been a loud child ever since he was born, wailing along with Edwin caterwauling at the sight of Fiona bleeding out from labor. Now a single parent, Edwin had attempted to do his work along with the caretaking of his son, but to manage both to the best of his ability interfered with his sleep schedule. Because he couldn't throw himself completely at his work, perhaps fixing up the vacuums or coming up with something even better, Edwin had to spend the better parts of his days feeding David, burping David, appeasing David, cleaning David, and listening to David cry and cry and cry and cry. Edwin loved his son. He really did. But without Fiona, Edwin was a man hanging onto a cliff's edge by the tips of his fingernails. He wasn't sure he'd be capable of being the father David needed. 4 years had since passed since Fiona died, and he still wasn't sure he was the man he needed.
Chocolate chip! Chocolate chip! Chocolate chip ice cream!
David's chocolate chip chant was getting louder and louder. The boy was spinning faster, and he was getting dangerously close to one of his workbenches.
David!
David stopped spinning, but the momentum sent him staggering across the cement floor. He smacked into Edwin's work table, knocking over the animatronic's head that Edwin had been working on, that of a bright yellow chicken. It launched off the table and fell to the cement floor. A spark shot out one of the chicken's eyes.
David, that's enough.
David's dark brown eyes blinked twice. Embarrassed, his arched brows bunched. He buried his face in his tiger and started to build up to a fit. Edwin sighed and picked up his son.
Come on, sport. I think someone needs a nap.
Edwin started walking up the cement stairs that led to the second floor of the building, a couple times readjusting his grip to make sure David didn't get too loose. David was remarkably big for his age. In spite of having two short parents, he weighed close to 50 pounds and was 3.5 feet tall. If he kept growing this quickly, Edwin wasn't going to be able to cart his son around anymore. Perhaps he could get Mr. Hugs to do it for him. Edwin's steps faltered.
That's not a bad idea.
What's a bad idea, Daddy?
No, not a bad idea. Just not a bad idea, which means it's a good idea. Never mind. How about instead I read you a story and you take a short nap, and then we'll get that ice cream?
Yeah!
Good boy.
Edwin made it to the top of the stairs where he put David on his feet, took the boy's hand, and led him down a wide hall to what used to be part of the factory's foreman offices. After Fiona passed away, Edwin knew he couldn't manage a house refurbishment project, his business, and his son all at the same time. And since the factory was where Edwin did his work, the choice to sell the mansion and move into the factory was an easy one. Edwin put the budget he and Fiona set aside for the mansion into retrofitting the factory offices into a small, compact apartment. Instead of a maze of cubicles, the foreman's office had been transformed into a small gallery kitchen with a single bedroom and bathroom to the side. All the apartment brick walls were painted in a soft eggshell white and decorated with an eclectic mix of David's artwork. As of now, David and Edwin slept in the same room. As he got older, he would need to make a new bedroom for the both of them. But as of now, it was easier to keep an eye on David if they slept in the same room. Not that Edwin slept there very often, if he slept at all. Most nights, he was working on the factory's main level at night, and David slept on a cot nearby. He knew this wasn't the ideal setting for raising a child. Without someone monitoring his daily adventures, he would constantly be on edge to make sure David didn't get hurt. Which is why he blessed his muse for granting him such a brilliant idea. But he would need time to implement it.
Daddy! Daddy!
Edwin was peripherally aware that David was climbing onto his small mattress, nestled inside a wooden white tiger's head. The head, which Edwin had carved himself, was designed to mimic the head of David's favorite plush toy, a white tiger, appropriately juvenilely named Tiger. Edwin blinked and frowned at his son, standing on his mattress, holding up said plush tiger, trying to get his father's attention.
What is it, David? Lie down.
David obliged, but he kept holding up his plush friend.
Tiger wants to know if he can have ice cream too. Chocolate chip?
Of course. What other flavor is there?
So he can have some?
I suppose we could ask Lucy to get some of the special invisible tiger ice cream made just for white tigers out of the back for him when we get to the ice cream parlor.
Lucy's nice.
Yes, she is.
David liked the grandmotherly woman who owned the ice cream parlor down the road, but Edwin had a hunch that Dave's love of ice cream was more of a desire to see Lucy than eating the ice cream itself.
But you won't see Lucy unless you and Tiger take a nap.
That's what Tiger says about naps.
Very wise.
David flopped onto his stomach and tucked Tiger up against his chest. He closed his eyes, and within seconds, his breathing slowed. Edwin smiled. David might have been a hyperactive child, but it bounced out with some wondrous qualities. Not only did he listen pretty well, but he could fall asleep almost instantaneously, a skill Edwin had to admit that he was a bit envious of. Edwin slightly smoothed David's silky soft hair. David stirred with a small murmur. then his breathing slowed even more. With a deep breath, Edwin tore himself away from his beautiful son and headed back down to the main floor of the factory. He had so much work to do, and he might just get only a half hour of uninterrupted concentration at a time with David. Making it back to the concrete stairwell, he looked to his right at the indoor slide he made for David. It was one of his few more recent memories you could say he cherished. Edwin found the slide in an old run-down amusement park, and he bolted it to the side of the concrete stairwell. He put a couple of mattresses at the bottom of the slide so David could wake up in the morning with a thrilling ride to start it off. If only Edwin had considered that David would demand Edwin carry him up the stairs over and over and over again so he could slide down repeatedly the day it was built. Edwin paced over to his work table and frowned at the yellow chick head lying near one of the table legs. He sighed. He really had no interest in continuing the project, but he had to. Edwin bent over and picked up the chick's head. Its ocular sensors were damaged. It would have to be redone completely. He sighed again. It occurred to him that he sighed a lot, but why shouldn't he? Edwin was trapped in a life he didn't want to live in, and he was working on projects he never, not even in the worst possible timelines of his existence, would ever think he'd lower himself to work on. He was turning weird creature costumes into entertainment robots, for heaven's sake. What was even remotely useful about this? But he didn't call those shots anymore. Not since he was forced to bow to another company's agenda. Edwin placed the chick's head on his work table. When Edwin had started his company, he thought his timing was perfect. It was the early 70s. People wanted more time to play, and their minds were opening on all sorts of things. Edwin assumed this would mean a large market for his machines. Unfortunately, even if that had been the case, his personal tragedies had undermined his ability to create machines that could attract a big market share. Raising a son on his own had pulled the rug out from under Edwin. He just hadn't had enough in him to do everything he needed to do for David. And when his finances ran dry, he had no choice but to sell his company to the behemoth that was Fazbear Entertainment. He didn't know much about the company when they first made contact, beyond its catchy slogan, "Where fantasy and fun come to life." But he knew they had been in the newspapers over some drama surrounding one of the founder's families. A quiet and imaginative engineer, similar to himself, named Henry Emily. Apparently, on one unfortunate day during the business hours, his daughter Charlotte had left the property for unknown reasons. Henry had actually built a robot for that exact purpose, a mascot whose whole purpose was to dissuade children from leaving the building and slyly guide them back to the diner if they tried to leave without an adult present. But when young Charlotte and the security puppet went missing, police later found them both dead and broken in the alleyway. As a result, Henry stepped back from running the company, and his business partner and friend, William Afton, assumed more executive roles. Edwin couldn't even begin to imagine how Henry must have felt. Losing Fiona had been incredibly difficult for Edwin, to say the least, but he couldn't fathom how he would react if he lost David. Afton, too, was a family man, so he likely took on more of Henry's responsibilities to give his friend some time to grieve. That said, he was also a businessman, who was also trying to expand his company and his portfolio. After all, he was also simultaneously managing his own robotics company. Edwin guessed that managing both Fazbear Entertainment and Afton Robotics was just too much on his plate, so he sent up some of his flunkies to find suitable candidates to lighten his load. When Edwin was discovered, Afton probably thought of him as nothing more as a suitable, if not conveniently cheap, alternative to at least the creative and technical genius Henry Emily brought to his business. Edwin turned over the chick's head. He closed his eyes and sighed his deepest, exhausted vent of air from his lungs. The fall to the floor had dented the chick's beak and snapped off one of the metal feathers atop its skull. He was behind schedule already, and totally overwhelmed with more and more projects coming in. He didn't have time to take David to get his promised ice cream today, or for any other day for that matter. But he'd have to. The outburst David would throw would be the tantrum of all tantrums, wasting even more time he didn't have. Edwin was contemplating the chicken's head. He had to get to work on it eventually. But a new idea was dancing around in his head, thinking about Mr. Hugs again, something else to watch over David, and then seeing the tiger's head of David's cot mimicking the appearance of his plush companion. Edwin pushed aside the chick's head and grabbed his drafting pad and pencil. If he could pull this off, it would open up an enormous amount of time for him. David would be entertained, Edwin would be free to concentrate on his work, and he would be able to complete a project he actually wanted to make and not be told to. As far as he saw it, everybody wins. Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What you building, Daddy?
A few hours later, Edwin was caught by David coming down the stairs working on a new project. He had been so worn out from working on projects for Fazbear Entertainment, he'd forgotten what it was like to put himself into his own creations. It felt like he was gasping for air for months now, and he could finally breathe fresh air again. It would put him behind schedule for his paid projects, but it would all make up for it once it was completed.
I'm building you a new toy.
What kind of toy?
One that will keep you company while I work.
David twisted his lips into his "I don't understand" expression.
I'm building you a friend.
Tiger's my friend.
David held up his white tiger, which wasn't looking as white as it used to be a few hours ago. It seemed like David took it on an adventure hunting down some dust bunnies while Edwin was working.
Well, once I finish what I'm building, you and Tiger will have another friend. Now, why don't we take Tiger upstairs and clean him up? Then we can have dinner, then ice cream.
Mac and cheese!
Edwin's chest tightened as David threw himself up the stairs. Edwin just needed one more year. Then he could put David into kindergarten. The preschool program at the moment was all the way across town. Not to mention the last time we tried to enroll David into a community program, he was met the next day with some fine folks from Child Protective Services. Apparently, David was very eager to share what he called home was an abandoned factory that made noises at night. So for now, David was better off with Edwin. And if this idea worked, Edwin could keep his son close and have enough time to pay the bills. For the next 3 weeks, Edwin cannibalized the machinery in the factory to build David's new friend by pulling wires from rooms that were never used, taking pistons from the defunct washers in the industrial cleaning room, and breaking off steel and spool and gears and springs from the levers machine. Edwin had fashioned the torso, arms, and a head of a primitive-looking endoskeleton. The physical housing was the easy part. The actual computer part of the robot took another few days of work. Once the exterior of the robot was constructed, all that was left to do was to give it the gift of life. Edwin wanted to create a thinking artificial intelligence, a simple program that would learn to mimic what it observed, no different than copying a paragraph of code from one program and pasting it into another. Edwin used a combination of Pascal and C++ to write his code at lightning speed. It was a bit unusual, and most programmers may call it slapdash, equating it to building a car that was held together by duct tape. But he didn't care about taking shortcuts when it came to making this robot, so long as it was finished. And David was happy with the results. After 22 days of feverish work, Edwin was finally able to present his creation to David. Edwin moved over to David, hiding the robot behind his back, as David was playing make-believe with Tiger.
Daddy, you smell.
Thank you for pointing that out.
He couldn't reprimand his son for his rude statement. He wasn't wrong. Between taking care of David and building his new brainchild, Edwin had let a few things fall in the periphery of his priorities. Personal hygiene was one of the early ones. But none of that mattered now. It was done.
Now, check this out.
Edwin lifted the endoskeleton from behind him, like a magician revealing the surprise of a trick. He set it down on the floor in front of David, then sat cross-legged next to it. David got on his knees and studied the new machine.
Ooh, what's its name, Daddy?
Edwin frowned. He hadn't thought of that. And now that he was studying the creature he had made, perhaps he should have taken a day or two to put some touch-ups on it. He glanced at David as he realized that the endoskeleton's features might have been a little too scary for a kid. The robot's skull began as two large white doll's eyes set with boxy pieces of metal housing from the broken-down compressors he took from the washers. To give it a more realistic appearance, a narrow protuberance juts up from between the eyes, formed using a rounded piece of metal from the innards of the levers machine. Below the eye, housing a hinged jaw, is welded in place, made from parts of the levers machine's guide bars. The robot had a wide, white-toothed mouth created from a set of novelty chattering teeth he found in his old belongings. The processors for its artificial intelligence was wheeled to the back of the skull, and a tangle of wires ran all the way around the back of it, stretching towards the back of the skull, weaving in and out of both eye sockets, snaking through the mouth, and extending down its articulated neck. This neck connected to a metallic spine, which links to a slightly curved makeshift ribcage that was attached to two robotic arms that end in pincer-like hands.
Okay, so maybe the thing wasn't pretty. In fact, its appearance was disturbing at best.
Thankfully, David didn't look scared. His eyes were sparkling, and his head was cocked in what looked more like curiosity than any sort of fear.
I haven't given it a name. How about Mimic?
That's a weird name, Daddy. But I like it. Mimic. Yeah, Mimic. That's okay.
I'm glad you approve.
What does it do, Daddy?
Well, let's find out.
Edwin reached behind Mimic's neck and activated it. Mimic's eyes lit up. They fluttered. Its mouth opened and closed. David leaned forward. In slow motion, Mimic leaned forward.
Ooh! Daddy, he's copying me!
David hugged Tiger closer to his chest. Mimic, still moving slowly, pulled its head back and pantomimed hugging a plush-sized visible object. David giggled. He put out a finger and touched Mimic's chest. Mimic put out a pincer and touched David's chest. David set Tiger down.
You wanna play patty cake?
Edwin studied both of his creations. On some level, apparently understanding that he had to show Mimic what to do, David clapped his hands slowly and then put his hands out, fingers up, palms towards Mimic. Mimic matched the movements as best he could. He speared his pincer to approximate David's hand position. David clapped again. Mimic brought his pincers together with a metallic clink. Edwin closed his eyes, rolled his shoulders, and let his face rest into a proud smile. He'd done it. Now he could get back to work on his paying jobs.
David, How about we take Mimic upstairs? You two can play while I take a shower.
David stopped playing. He dropped his hands. Mimic did the same.
That's good, Daddy.
David exaggerately put his fingers on his nose.
You eat soap.
Mimic smacked his face with a similar motion to David's.
Mimic agrees.
Edwin laughed and stood. He leaned over and picked up Mimic as David jumped to his feet, wrapping his fingers around Edwin's wrist.
I like Mimic.
Edwin smiled. Whoa. Then he jumped in panic. Mimic had reached out and wrapped a pincer around Edwin's wrist. The sudden feel of cool metal against Edwin's skin made him nearly jump out of his clothes. That primitive part of his brain was signaling warning bells of an unknown element gripping onto him. Would Mimic clamp down hard enough to hurt himself? But as he looked down at the halfless body, he saw a strangely comforting image. Mimic's touch was gentle, even hesitant. He smiled. It would be the perfect companion for David. Edwin relaxed for the first time in a half a decade and took his son and his new friend up the stairs. The next 2 weeks were the best Edwin could remember having since Fiona died. After catching up on some sleep for the first night after Mimic was completed, Edwin woke up energized and ready to go back creating the characters Fazbear Entertainment wanted. And because David was occupied with his new friend, Edwin now had long stretches of uninterrupted work. It was fantastic. It was amazing how much he could get done now when he wasn't disturbed and distracted every other minute. When Edwin had constructed Mimic, he hadn't built the necessary components, nor the artificial intelligence, for it to speak coherently. But David didn't seem to mind his mute friend. In fact, while Edwin could only see a sparse amount of himself on David's appearance, he saw himself finally reflected in his son when his creative mind was starting to churn. David began to develop a sort of sign language to communicate with his robotic friend. David's sign language involved often hilarious imitations of the things he was trying to communicate. Ice cream, for example, was conveyed as a gesture that involved turning one hand to a bowl-like shape and using the other hand to approximate the shape of a spoon, then miming the action of eating ice cream from the bowl. David would even wipe his chin with an adorable pantomime claw to wipe the dribbles of ice cream from his lip. An adorably brilliant touch, Edwin thought. But Mimic was able to copy it by himself after a while. Mimic copied every move David made, which created a positive feedback loop where David would keep teaching Mimic more and more things, which, after a while, started to get a little peculiar. The first time Edwin caught David and Mimic doing something that caught his eye, he found them on the ground floor, coloring. Edwin had just finished rebuilding the yellow chicken robot, and the cupcake on her plate was making him hungry. He looked over to his son to inquire if he was ready for lunch, but swallowed his words when he saw Mimic wasn't just mimicking David's actions. It was drawing with crayons all on its own. It wasn't clean, it was quite clumsy, and it wasn't keeping inside the lines like David. It was probably still attempting to copy David's actions, but was trying to compensate for using different colors and drawing on different paper prompts. David always enjoyed coloring every aspect of the page, which Mimic also attempted to replicate. Later that same day, Edwin's concentration was momentarily interrupted by a rhythmic thwacking sound. When Edwin got up to investigate it, he spotted the two of them, along with Tiger, a few feet from his work table. David and Mimic were tossing a red rubber ball back and forth. David wasn't the best at it, and he constantly missed his target, and the ball would end up bouncing all over the wide floor room. Undaunted, David would always scamper over to it and try again. Mimic's throws, as they were a copy of David's, were also just as inconsistent, but David was clearly delighted by the clumsy game of catch. Edwin smiled. Mimic was fulfilling his purpose, doing exactly what he was designed to do, keeping an eye on David and keeping him preoccupied.
After a while, he was practically another member of the family now. It went everywhere David went. He sat at the table when David ate, perched at the edge of the sink when David brushed his teeth, and copied David's movements all the while. One evening, as they ate, David pushed his bowl of mac and cheese across the table so it was front of the mimic. Mimic immediately took the spoon and scooped up some of the noodles. Edwin had to scramble to stop Mimic from dropping the mac and cheese through its open mouth.
Whoa! Whoa there! I'm afraid you're not designed to digest food.
Hey! Let's play trains!
Hold up there, conductor. What do we do first?
David looked up, momentarily confused, then twisted his lips.
Oh, sorry, Daddy.
David began cleaning up some of his dishes and putting away some of the food. David looked at Mimic as he was tidying up.
Always put things away. And remember, Mimic, milk always goes in the fridge.
Using two hands, David carefully carried the quart carton to the fridge and stowed it away. Mimic was watching his every move. There were some drawbacks to the Mimic's base programming. Because David always carried Tiger, Mimic usually had one of his arms curved in a way where a plush tiger could reside. One day, David decided Mimic needed his own tiger.
Daddy, can we buy Mimic a tiger?
Edwin was busy working on taking apart some creepy doll-like child robot wearing a propeller hat when David had asked him that question. He looked at Mimic's inwardly curved arm. The gesture did tug on his heartstrings, but he shook his head no.
Sorry, sports, but money's a little tight right now.
Okay.
David had heard this often enough that he knew what it meant. He sulkily trotted off and Mimic followed right after. They disappeared for a few hours, but he heard them making commotion behind the levers machine. Edwin got up from his work table. He had been busy putting away the final touches on a Pirate Fox character when he saw them both bent over a pile of lace, folding and refolding it into knots.
David, what are you two doing?
David looked up from his handiwork. He grinned. Then he looked back at Mimic.
Is it ready?
What the?
Edwin's brow rose. The Mimic just nodded. It nodded its head in response. Responding, not mimicking. When did that start? David leaned back and pointed at Mimic. Mimic opened his mouth in its version of a smile. Edwin cocked his head and blinked in amazement. Cradled in the curve of the Mimic's left arm was an approximation of a tiger. It was made out of a yellowing lace, held together in knots and bundles of string. David and Mimic had used the old material to form a head, a body, two arms, and two legs. They even managed to create little nubs atop the head that looked like tiger ears.
See, Daddy? Now Mimic has a tiger, too!
Edwin reached down and ruffled David's soft brown hair.
Yes, he does. Very well done, David. And very clever, Mimic.
David's eyes were beaming. And Mimic's eyes lit up brighter than usual. After that day, Edwin began keeping a closer eye on Mimic. One night, he hooked him up to his pale, fat computer terminal to take a closer look at his programming. At first, all Mimic could do was slow copies of simple movements and gestures from David. Edwin had been blinded to the Mimic's earlier peculiarities, because he had been so proud of his robot that was welded together with the robotics engineer's equivalent of two pieces of tape and a rubber band. But now, its abnormalities were beginning to become impossible to ignore. Looking at the monitor, with a stack of later codes under the Mimic 1 program, he was obsessed with finding what string of codes were causing Mimic to act so human. Originally, he called it Mimic because it was a cute way to pay homage to his name for the program, the aforementioned Mimic 1. Now, he was thinking of calling it Savior 1. If the development speed of this AI could be replicated into other projects, into his other robots for Fazbear Entertainment, he could patent and sell a brand new, ever-evolving learning program.
It could not just be applied to various robots he could restart his company with, but it also could be inputted into the animatronics for Fazbear Entertainment to replicate stage shows in record time, speeding up his project output. David had certainly taken a shine to giving Mimic new tasks. On the top of his head, keeping David and himself in clean clothes had always been a challenge. Edwin had no washer and dryer that worked. Ironic, considering the plethora of broken down ones that were located in the cleaning bay on the ground floor. But none of them could be salvaged. That would probably be the first improvement he'd make when he got enough money saved up from Fazbear Entertainment. So now he had to go to the laundromat. And of course, bring David there with him. The only issue is that it seemed David was quite the selective outburster. Only when he was around others did he seem to have his most dramatic tantrums. So, he and David were well known at the laundromat, and various other local retailers in the area. But when everything was all said and done, David was at the very least cooperative in putting his clothes away, after he was told to do it, of course. After a few trips to the laundromat and back, Mimic would observe David stowing his pajamas and clothes on the hanging rods in his closet. The last time they returned from a visit, David couldn't even get started folding his clothes up when Mimic started taking clothes out himself and doing it for him. It even used the same stool David used to make it to the rod below the top shelf. After that night, Mimic began storing David's clothes for him. It was remarkable seeing Mimic grow, in a way. Edwin needed to find what was causing this phenomenon. The problem was that he couldn't make heads or tails of it from his... He decided to refer to it now as improvisational code writing. He imagined that it would sound better in the future sales pitch for the program if it got that far. The problem was that if he was going to sell his code, he needed to work out the kinks. And Mimic had a few of them. Beyond the aforementioned abnormal learning process, because of Edwin's hastiness to get the project done, Mimic had no sensors or algorithms to indicate actions he shouldn't mime, or better yet, stop actions that David was attempting to do. A recent example was an instance when Edwin was focused on toying with a blue rabbit animatronic. Or maybe it was purple. He couldn't tell. The material seemed to constantly shift its hue depending on the light. But his focus was on rebuilding its face, was interrupted when he heard the shuffling of metal and leather.
Look at me, Dad!
Edwin lifted his gaze, and then his eyes went wide. David was clad in one of the Springlock costumes that was sent by Fazbear Entertainment. David was frolicking around on all fours, and since the costume was too big for David, the limbs were flopping all over the concrete. They were getting filthy. But more concerning, the Springlocks were noticeably whining under the pressure.
What do you think you're doing?
A second pair of padding feet started to rhythmically make its way behind one of his workstations. Now trotting behind David, as best he could trot, Mimic was stuffed inside the top part of a green alligator costume. Edwin was going to have to clean up both costumes, like he didn't already have enough to do.
Look what I can make Mimic do! He can dress all by himself! Isn't that amazing, Daddy?
Edwin snapped the yellow dog head off of David.
Those costumes aren't for play! Get out of those costumes right now!
David's lip quivered. Edwin flicked his gaze up. Mimic, whose bright yellow eyes were glimmering behind the maw of the green alligator head, was peeking behind a pile of lace.
You too, C-3PO!
Edwin got the robot body out of the suit and plopped it down in the middle of the work floor. David was sniveling. But Edwin was scared because he knew what those suits could do to someone if something came loose. He marched over to David and spoke clearly and directly to him.
Now, go over there and play quietly. Never touch these suits again. Understood?
Okay, Daddy.
Edwin groaned at the memory. It only got worse from there. He only got maybe half an hour of more work done before he was interrupted again during the middle of a tricky soldering job.
Daddy, I'm hungry.
David!
Edwin's hand slipped, and the torch got too close to the metal. The solder blotched in the wrong place completely. Edwin crossed his arms and glared at his son.
You just made me mess something up. Now I have to start all over again.
David looked down at his feet, Edwin saw Mimic gazing down the bottom of his own legless torso.
Sorry, Daddy.
It's okay, David. But could you please, quietly, play with Mimic for a little bit longer while I finish what I am doing here?
Okay, Daddy. Me and Mimic are gonna draw.
Edwin breathed a sigh of relief. He cut the right wire to stop the explosion of tears. He pointed to one of his filing cabinets. I have a box of old construction paper in the drawer over there. Multiple colors. You can use that to draw whatever you want to, with Mimic.
Neato, Daddy!
Edwin smiled and watched David and Mimic hurriedly spread out various colored papers and crayons. Besides patty cake, drawing had been the main thing that brought David and the robot closer together. They did it every day. And like Mimic's ever-evolving intelligence, it too took on its own shape after a while. David and Mimic had a habit of making all sorts of drawings and scribbles together that looked vaguely hieroglyphic. When Edwin had asked about the rationale behind it, David simply responded that it was made up. It might have been made up, but it had enraptured David and Mimic that they seemed to understand it. Now, whenever David and Mimic drew, they would pass each other notes in their coded language that only they understood. Speaking only in sign language, they too only could translate. Edwin shook himself back into reality. He could keep working on a Mimic, tweaking his functionality, making him more mobile, and improve his external design. He could also improve his base programming so that he could speed up his reaction time and fluidity. But he couldn't understand what was causing this robot to behave the way it was. Mimic was meant to copy, not react or respond. Mimic wasn't supposed to be capable of coming up with its own ideas, like drawing its own symbols or coming up with its own gestures. But lo and behold, it could. Edwin reshifted himself back in front of his tan keyboard and began typing a few more lines of code that expanded the Mimic's processor. He needed to see more of what the Mimic was capable of, and wanted to see what it could do if it could execute more and more complex tasks. He would also need to add a voice box and speech matrix into its computer interface at some date so David could have a friend with a voice at some point. But that was a task for future Edwin. Rubbing his eyes with a big yawn, he turned off his computer and retreated back upstairs. Things were getting better now that the Mimic was in the Murray's lives, but it was still a nascent project. Edwin carried himself to his apartment bed and dropped into his mattress, and fell into a restless slumber. Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
That out.
2 hours later, Edwin woke abruptly to his excited son jumping up and down on his chest. David slid off his dad. Edwin took a deep breath to refill his lungs to resupply the breath that had been stolen away from David's full weight hitting his gut. Edwin blinked at the vivid yellow ray of sun that was streaking in through the closet window, beneath the shade that Edwin hadn't bothered to lower the night before.
I'll go out and wait for you to come and play with me, Daddy.
Edwin nodded vaguely, still groggy from the restless slumber last night. Edwin sat up and put his feet on the floor. It was a losing battle to try and find rest in his bed now. In the distance, he could hear David slide down to the factory's first floor. Mimic was down in the workshop, so he'd keep David occupied while Edwin grabbed a quick shower and breakfast. Edwin stood and head toward the shower, turning on the faucet and cleaning off the midnight grime, mentally organizing his tasks for the day and how best to tackle them. Edwin was still strategizing when he finished up his shower and started to make a bowl of cereal for himself and David. Edwin chuckled. He forgot he was waiting for him to come downstairs to play ball. Edwin trotted down the concrete stairs and called out for his son.
David, breakfast!
Edwin was expecting a sudden squeal of joy because David loved to eat. Edwin didn't hear anything. He did, however, feel something. The temperature. It was a lot warmer than it normally was. The factory never got airflow. Because of the painted over windows, there was never a draft. But Edwin felt a breeze of air now. He felt a strong current of warm air. Edwin tensed. In spite of the warmth that wafted through the factory and touched his skin softly, he felt a chill skitter down his spine. He frowned and picked up his pace.
David?
Edwin spun around and saw the factory's main double doors were standing wide open.
David!
Edwin took off towards the open doorway, dashing past his workstation and mimic following his path as he ran. He made his way to the outside gravel parking lot, shouting David's name again. He wasn't sure why he was so panicked, but his instincts had never been wrong before. But there David was, in the parking lot of the factory, playing ball by himself. The next 10 seconds played out as any other normal 10 seconds should. They went by 1 second at a time. But for Edwin, they played out in slow motion, every second a minute in time, and would replay infinitely and went on forever and ever in his mind's eye. 1 second. Edwin rushed out into the brilliant morning sun and breathed in a mouthful of humid air. 2 seconds. David threw his ball onto the ground, which bounced into the street. 3 seconds. David, an oblivious, wide grin on his eager face, ran after it. 4 seconds. David's legs still churning, gaze fixed on the bright red ball. His giggles a distant voice muffled by Edwin's own heartbeat. 5 seconds. Edwin started running himself. David finally made it onto the street to pick up his red ball. 6 seconds. Edwin screamed David's name again. The boy stood up, ball in his tiny hands, and looked at his father with a confused expression on his face. 7 seconds. The roar of an engine and the sound of brakes squealing. 8 seconds. A white oncoming van came into view, a screech of rubber on the asphalt. 9 seconds. A blur of white went by Edwin's view, taking his son away from his eyes with a sickening thud. 10 seconds. The car fully disappeared, and a cacophony of screams were heard. Edwin, his chest heaving up and down faster than he could remember, ran for his son. He had tried to convince himself that he hadn't just watched what had just happened, that David was fine. But he knew he was lying to himself. Edwin reached David's side. He bent over and tried to gather David into his arms, but another pair of stronger arms pulled him back. Edwin lashed out, trying to free himself. They didn't want to move his boy. His boy. He was covered in bright and black red, and his body was... his boy was broken. His precious smile was still on his face, but all his teeth had been destroyed. His limbs only vaguely retained their shape, and the pool of red liquid was growing beneath his chest. Edwin had tears pouring from his eyes, blurring his vision as everything whirled around him into an unseen, vague, multicolored ink blot. He opened his mouth, and he heard a high-pitched keen. The sound was his own. The pain of losing his son. It struck him from the deepest part of his soul, and it was wailing out of him. Edwin blinked twice. He was sitting on the edge of his bed, alone, his feet touching the cold floor. He struggled to get his bearings, and when he got them, he wished he hadn't. It had been 2 weeks since David passed. He had no memories of it, beyond the seemingly endless loop of David's death, replaying in his mind's eye over and over and over again. He did understand, intellectually, what he did live through. He lived through burying his only son and the last remainder of his family. He grasped that he was now, and forever, alone. And he understood that everything he had that was worth living for was gone. Yet his life was still moving onwards. Edwin pushed himself off the bed. Amazingly, his legs held him up. They also took him to the bathroom and got him through a normal daily routine. Except, it wasn't normal. As if anything could be normal again. He could pretend that his life wasn't quieter, lonelier, and just borderline stranded. When Edwin finally looked himself in the mirror, though, locking eyes on the man whom his wounded soul now belonged to, it looked like he was staring at a stranger. Apparently, he hadn't eaten much, if anything, during the last 2 weeks. He had the gaunt face of a man who was slowly withering away. A scraggly beard was filling around his chin, and around his now drooping and overgrown mustache. He turned away from himself. He couldn't look at himself anymore. He left the bathroom and headed downstairs to his workstations. There, his gaze landed on Mimic. He would have to deactivate him at some point, but he didn't have the energy to do so now. He barely had enough energy to lumber over to the workstation. Dropping into his rolling chair, Edwin surveyed his current project. He recalled that Fazbear Entertainment had sent their regards and inquired if he needed any time for himself. He wasn't sure if he'd responded back. He'd been working on their projects, he realized during his fugue state. The Brown Bear he was working on finally had its music box kinks worked out, but he had no memories of tinkering on it, and no desire to continue fixing it. But what choice did he have? His son was dead. But Edwin had obligations. Sighing, he bent over the work table and told himself to concentrate. He would feel better if he just focused on his work. Edwin picked up a pair of pliers. He looked at the tangle of wires and Edwin frowned. He tried his best to tackle the tangle, to start the process from some point or another angle. But for the life of him, he couldn't remember how to grip them. They felt alien in his hands. Did he use a fistic grip or a fingertip grip? He tried both. Neither felt right. A loud clunk shot the table he was working on. His gaze followed the noise. It was Mimic. He had climbed up to the table and now was staring at him just below his eye level. Edwin's gaze shifted lower. Mimic was clutching his makeshift tiger. Edwin could feel his face starting to heat up. Slowly, a memory made its way through the murk of his current mind. Edwin was snatching David's tiger from Mimic's grasp. Mimic was, for some reason, carrying around David's tiger. He remembered squeezing the tiger to his chest, crying so hard that his tears soaked into Tiger's fur. Mimic simply observed him all the same. Edwin shook his head, willing the memory to return to the back of his mind. Emptiness was better than the jagged shard of those memories that cut and stab into his soul. Mimic cocked his head. Edwin glared at him. Don't you have something better to do? Then stare at me. Mimic set aside his tiger and lifted both sets of pincers, forming one set into a bowl shape. He used the other pincers to create a makeshift spoon. Mimic mimed the spoon to his mouth. Then Mimic used his pincers to approximate the gesture of wiping ice cream from his chin. Edwin's breathing was getting heavy and fast. Seeing Mimic use David's sign language was just too much for Edwin to process. Edwin threw Mimic onto the ground with all his might. He turned around, reaching out blindly, not knowing why he needed it. Edwin set a weapon to wield. He had a sudden, out-of-control imperative to hit something. No, to destroy something. Edwin's hands closed over a metal rod, sharp-edged and cold. The metal was heavy. The weight of it felt good in his hands as well. So did lifting it, and so did bringing it over the animatronic's head. Edwin battered Mimic over and over with the metal rod, howling like a wild animal in the pale moonlight. Metal sparked against metal. The reverberation of each blow bounced up Edwin's arm, sending jabs of pain into his shoulders. But Edwin didn't care. He only cared about destroying Mimic, pulverizing it, the only real thing that Edwin could attack in an effort to annihilate his pain. Edwin pummeled Mimic again and again and again. He battered the animatronic's head, thrashed at its chest, and lashed at its arms. Edwin's swings were big and wide and wild. The spittle that had shot from his mouth when he screamed at Mimic was now a froth that jetted from Edwin's in great gushes. By now, when the spit landed on Mimic, its eyes were dangling out from their sockets, hanging against the Mimic's cracked fake teeth. Edwin blinked. He'd been so lost in his rage that he couldn't see how much damage he had done to Mimic. Its eyes weren't the only thing out of place, and saying that was a generous estimation. The metal Edwin had used to form Mimic's forehead and jaw was crimpled together, compressing Mimic's face. The broken teeth were shoved back into Mimic's head, caught up in torn and tangled wires. The remainder of Mimic's wiring had been raggedly wrestled away from Mimic's metallic spine, and the spine itself was bent backwards. Mimic's ribcage was crushed in multiple places, and Mimic's arms hung askew, with his pincers mutilated. Edwin was destroying his creation. The creation he had made for his son. For 2 weeks, Edwin had been lost in a void of despair, and now his despair had turned to rage. He had to get it out somehow or it would consume him. Edwin knew, even as he screamed, lashed, and foamed at the mouth, the real thing he was angry at was himself. He failed as a businessman. He failed as a creator. He never got a chance to become a dutiful husband. And now, his failure was complete. He failed as a father. He was worthless. He was a stain on the world and a poison to those whom he loved. He wanted to end it. End it all. But he knew he couldn't do it. So he sublimated the wrath and agony that was overflowing in his soul onto Mimic with an intensity he hadn't known he had in him. He lost control of his humanity and let the dark thoughts he kept buried beneath burst forth. Those evil, ferocious, and savage whispers that his consciousness kept at bay were no longer held back. He could almost feel his murderous thoughts pouring through his strikes and transfusing into the metal of the Mimic. Edwin's legs went out from under him. He collapsed to the ground and stared at the remains of his reaction, the remains of his son's friend, the last remnant of his son in the world. Mimic, though not completely destroyed, was now a pathetic picture of total defeat. And whether it be poetic irony or divine fate, he was laying in an exact mirror of David's crippled body from the accident. One last tragic mimic of his little boy. Edwin closed his eyes and slammed his back to the cold slab ground, his palms covering his face. His anger dissolved into regret. And the regret brought tears that he thought just might flow forever and ever. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. Before I conclude this chapter of Into the Night and the Security Breach audiobook series, I do want to briefly expound on some minor details that I did add that were not present in the Tales from the Pizzaplex novellas, because At the risk of sounding a bit narcissistic, I do believe there are indeed some errors on the author's part in the minutiae of some of the lore stated in both The Storyteller and, most in particular, the Mimic Tales novellas. While the Tales from the Pizzaplex being considered as a canon element in the FNAF franchise, and to specify, I am using the term canon in the manner in which the majority wield it, to be a term to imply the existence of the material within the universe itself, and not just simply the franchise. I tend to lean more conservative in saying that Tales appears to be a deliberate choice to correct the mistakes of Fazbear Frights maintaining the literature side of FNAF within its own domain, when a large portion of feedback that came from it is the fandom overwhelmingly arguing, why should we even bother with a story that only takes place in a facsimile of the world we care about? This isn't the case of Pop Goes, where it was a fan series developed by another team that is actively trying to tell a different story from the one we are familiar with. The books were marketed and advertised in a manner that leveraged them as material to use when considering the past mysteries of the franchise. And while we can argue all day the merit of that statement now that the Tales series has concluded, the fact remains that we can't logically maintain the illusion that Tales is only meant to fill in the gaps before the games officially pick up a direction or reveal an answer, when the games themselves rely on the books to exposit the narrative elements necessary in order for the story to be remotely fulfilling or coherent, especially ever since the Scott Cawthon 2.0 interview, where in many ways it's kind of confirmed that Tales is actually more closer to what Scott was trying to accomplish with the storyline of Security Breach than the actual game of Security Breach itself. As a consequence, however, when you do attempt to line these elements up, you discover there are competing components that don't add up when placed in the canon Five Nights at Freddy's timeline. The most egregious of these was the statement that Edwin had created his company in the early 70s, after he graduated from college, something that seems to even been doubled down on when the new Steel Wolf FNAF trailer, Secrets of the Mimic, hinted the date of the game setting to be 1979. But even if we are generous with our estimations of when Edwin started his business, say 1974, and add 5 years to the date to account for David's age in the novella and the new game trailer, the story would also take place at or around 1979. But we know from The Storyteller that Edwin is only 40 years older from when the Mimic novella took place. So, if we were to take the book at its word and equate it without fault, that would mean the events of The Storyteller, let alone the events of Security Breach, occur in the year 2019, which, for multiple elements of the series that I've already gone over, doesn't quite work when Five Nights at Freddy's 3 and 6, aka Freddy Fazbear Pizzeria Simulator, take place in the year 2023. So, in attempt to rectify this issue, I attempted to add more theorized details of both when Edwin was hired on by Fazbear Entertainment and what the reason behind his hiring was. This still doesn't add in lining up Edwin's age with the current plotline, as well as line up with Edwin Murray's statements of the company being a behemoth when he sold his services to them, as generally, even in the 70s, the company was only still nascent and possibly still only Fredbear's Family Diner. But that era of the franchise has never made a definitive statement on what had occurred in the 70s, nor when, so we could be getting some more clarified details of that in Secrets of the Mimic. Plus, my choice to have Edwin's employment being a result of Henry Emily being no longer present in the company, in addition to William Apton seemingly taking over more of it after Charlie's passing, would also explain the necessity in hiring a new robotics expert to maintain and build their primary bread makers. After all, it legitimately wouldn't make sense if Henry was still around. Beyond this, and some minor changes for the sake of narrative flow, pacing, and the change of landscape the story is being told in, the stories of both the Mimic and the Storyteller have been left mostly unchanged from their overall lore implications and reveals. However, I do encourage you to read the books for yourselves and come to your own conclusions when it comes to theory crafting. Because, from where I see it, Scott is adamant that the story takes place in 1979.
which most likely means someone, whether it be Scott or the writer of these novellas, got the dates wrong and accidentally made Edwin younger than he should have been. It's a minor error in the grand scheme of things, but prominent enough one that should probably be clarified given the dubious amounts of time passing in between FFPS/UCN and Help Wanted and Security Breach, respectfully. And with all that said, that will end tonight's program of Into the Night. How did Fazbear Entertainment get their hands on the Mimic One program? What will this mean when the storyteller becomes activated? And most importantly, has this program been the creature pulling the strings behind the scenes? Or is there someone else toying with experiments they cannot control? Find out all of this and more next time on Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to stay updated, please consider subscribing, following, or sharing this podcast. It truly helps us broaden our reach. Consider following us on our Twitter at Fazbear Podcast, joining in our Discord, or supporting us on our Patreon and merch store using the various links in the description of this episode. And as always, I have been your host, Nick, and I would like to thank all of you once again for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.